Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
And each neighborhood is different, you know. Peace Park, for example, is recreational. Cabbage Patch is about food production. And Walnut Park, it's increasingly about outdoor sports. And so it's kind of for each community to determine what does a green space mean to them and what's most needed there.
I'm Sarah Fenske. Some parts of the city are going green, really green. Parcels where homes once stood are now purposefully being left vacant, not from neglect, but as green space. The city has long seen the merits of these green parcels, but struggled to maintain them. Now a new initiative with real money behind it aims to ensure the land is maintained and held for the community. And joining us today to tell us more is Laura Ginn. She is a vacancy strategist for the St. Louis Development Corporation. Laura, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Laura, the St. Louis Community Land Trust will be a new organization, but it builds on some ideas that the city has been working on for years. What first got the city and the St. Louis Development Corporation thinking about returning vacant lands to green space?
Oh, gosh, it's a hodgepodge of different reasons that kind of culminated here. So one, just picking at random, would be the Missouri Department of Conservation interest in connecting city residents to nature. This is our state Fish and Wildlife Agency, and it's their mission to, you know, connect Missourians to opportunities to interact with nature. And they recognize that the majority of Missourians do live in cities. And so kind of shifting their approach to conservation over the last several years and really thinking about how to better support cities in infusing nature throughout. Another thing that kind of led to this was our poor sewer infrastructure and our combined sewer system, where we have the same tunnels managing water that's falling from the sky and water that's coming from inside our homes through the same pipes. And over the years, and as those have aged, they're not equipped to handle both. And so the more open space we have to absorb stormwater, the more we keep out of those tunnels and reduce things like sewage backups in people's basements and local street flooding. And then on, you know, another angle would be that we have two forest parks worth of vacant properties, and they're majority concentrated in North City. And they're not going to, you know, become all houses in the next 5 or 10 years. And so what are some short-term and long-term uses that are going to help us plan for the future of St. Louis?
Okay, so that is a hodgepodge. You did a great job in sort of getting us through that all very quickly. I'm very impressed here. So with all of these as motivations here, this led to the Green City Coalition. And this, again, comes out of the St. Louis Development Corporation that you work for. Was this mainly looking at vacant lots that the city already owned?
Yes, but it's hard to do that. You know, the Land Bank LRA, Land Reutilization Authority, only owns about 40% of the vacant properties in the city. And they're not really concentrated. So 60% are held by private owners, individuals, out-of-state people that have, you know, had it passed down through generations or corporations or even, as we've seen a lot more lately, speculators. So, you know, we try to concentrate around the properties that are going to be easier. But it's not that simple. We do have to work towards acquiring those private abandoned properties where it makes sense, and really kind of piecing these together.
And when you're piecing them together, is the goal to have just a little pocket park, or are you looking at much bigger chunks of space?
It depends on where, and it depends on the neighborhood and the function of the space, you know. So, for example, Wells Goodfellow neighborhood historically had two really large streams come in and converge right in the middle of that neighborhood. And as they were turned into sewer systems, the water still flows there, you know, and so we have these ongoing water problem areas. So we've got about 7 acres in that neighborhood that's being converted to more of a passive recreation space, its primary function is to absorb water and help alleviate those issues. But then next up, hopefully being a quality outdoor space to go and interact with nature. Residents have prioritized an orchard in that space, so there's fruiting trees within and a part of that. but it's kind of got this larger function behind it. And each neighborhood is different, you know. Peace Park, for example, is recreational. Cabbage Patch is about food production. And Walnut Park, it's increasingly about outdoor sports. And Shot Put, discus, javelin, you're throwing sports. So it's kind of for each community to determine what does a green space mean to them. And what's most needed there.
Hmm. So you've been acquiring these properties, and they're being put together, and now they're going over to this new organization that's almost being formed out of nothing. This is the St. Louis Community Land Trust. What's the idea with what they will do with the ownership?
So a land trust is a way of kind of shifting agency and power to the residents most impacted by those land use decisions. You know, every property has an owner, whether that's a land bank or the city or an individual. And what a land trust does is it provides a mechanism for a real community ownership, where the board is primarily residents, where membership is from within residents of the neighborhoods, so that you can further plan around those green spaces and the structural development that will come next with neighborhoods in mind, making sure the benefits are felt by people in the neighborhood and by people who've lived there for, you know, generations sometimes. So it's a way for us to kind of tap and shift power from the kind of top down that we've had so far and really moving that into residents' hands.
So will the neighbors be driving this overall organization, or the neighbors are more going to be driving individual projects in individual neighborhoods?
What's kind of fun about these next steps is that's all kind of to be determined, right? Hmm. So we've worked really hard to put together a solid, sustainable funding model and really figure out what partners we need at the table to set this up for success. And now that we know it's possible, now it becomes building that resident leadership, building out the board, hiring an executive director. And that inaugural board is going to decide how governance works, how decisions are kept in communities, how people are represented around what happens from here on out. So that's going to be kind of the fun part of this next whole year.
So you mentioned funding, and that is a big deal here. This isn't just a pie-in-the-sky idea whatsoever. Right. You now have $1 million grant from the Missouri Department of Conservation. It's technically a challenge grant. What does that mean in this case?
That means they acknowledge that green spaces are only one piece of the puzzle. And especially when you're working on nature in cities, it's part of a larger built environment. We know that green space development in other cities can lead to displacement. It can push property level or values up, right, and start to outprice people. And so this really creates a mechanism to make sure that these green spaces aren't having any potential negative impacts, and they're not repeating any mistakes of the past of kind of government-mandated development like that. So the Department of Conservation, it's really impressive that they've been able to recognize that, and then not only recognize it, but put their money behind it and call on other partners to come and join them and say, this isn't just about green space. Now we need housing. We need public health. We need environmental justice, right? And so we can continue to build those partnerships and those funding opportunities and really set neighborhoods up for success.
So you have 7 different project sites now. These are in 4 different neighborhoods. That's College Hill, Wells Goodfellow, Walnut Park, and Baden. These 4 different sites, these are all on the north side.
Right.
Is the expectation that some will be added on the south side, or is this going to begin as a north side project?
It's going to begin in those 4 neighborhoods, and I'll, I guess, defer back to the future board to decide where they go from here. We've already, just as a coalition, as a, you know, ragtag partnership of entities, kind of shifted away from more of an environmental planning perspective of where we need green spaces for resilience and more into what does the community need. And I think we'll continue to see that shift. And as it moves more and more into resident leadership, who knows where it might go. But we're also partnering with several other emerging land trusts and existing, right? So we have Beyond Housing, and they're doing incredible work. And there are others that are forming too, like the North Webster Land Trust, working to retain affordable housing in a historically Black neighborhood of Webster Groves. And so how do we all work together to shift our local systems and our policy and conversations and support all of us in these efforts? Because really what we see in other cities is the more trust you have, the better.
You mentioned other
it's not
cities.
Really a
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's not a competitive space. We're all going to be better for collaborating in this, right?
So you mentioned other cities. I find myself curious about this. It seems like such a great plan, and it also seems like, wow, you know, why did we never think of doing this sooner? Is there another city that has kind of provided a model for doing this sort of thing?
Dudley Street Initiative is a great one, and also Los Angeles Neighborhood Land Trust has been one I've been watching for years because it's an example of a city land trust that covers several neighborhoods, and that's really what we've been trying to look at is how do you cover a wide range and very different types of communities and retain that decision-making throughout. Los Angeles Neighborhood Land Trust, New Orleans, Boston, Baltimore. There's some great examples, and what's been most fun about that, I think, is learning what works from other cities, but also getting to see what won't work here. We're a unique place.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking what we can from others and kind of manipulating that into what's really going to work best for St. Louis.
So one of the examples of this that you mentioned earlier is this Peace Park site, and this is on North Grand in the College Hill neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us just assumed this was a city park, and the Post-Dispatch actually had a great story about this new initiative and talked a bit about that park there. But I'd love to get people up to speed on how this is going to affect that property, because I think this is one so many of us have driven by and just not been aware mm-hmm. of the backstory there. So what exactly is Peace Park? And what will this project do for it?
Yeah, you can Google it, right? You can Google map yourself right to Peace Park, but it is not an official city park, and it never has been. Back in, oh gosh, a long time ago, a great civil rights advocate named Otis Woodard came to St. Louis from Memphis, and he started working for a Lutheran church in the area, and he lived on the block that is now Peace Park. It was residential before. And in his yard and then in the space next door, he would always collect and put out items for people to come and take, whether that was food, clothing, you know, basic essentials. And it became this gathering space for people to come, you know, for community and for assistance, and it had this share shed for sharing things. And Otis passed away, I think, about 6 years ago in 2015. A couple of his children tried to keep it going, but couldn't quite keep it maintained, and that's there. And it's because the entire block is owned by either the land bank or private entities, and you know, they're technically considered vacant and abandoned properties at this point. So in 2017, out of work from the For the Sake of All report that highlighted the racial disparities in that zip code, 63107, partners at WashU started working with residents. A team of about 10 resident researchers, and they spent a year researching these racial health disparities and decided the one thing they wanted to start with was revitalizing Peace Park into a true park that had the sustained maintenance that it deserved as the, you know, kind of the first mechanism for transforming a vacant property to a real quality asset for the neighborhood.
Hmm.
So that's continued since, and there's been some turnover in leadership of organizations that were trying to lead the effort. And so it's kind of come into the Green City Coalition fold as another property that needs the sustained model of how it will continue to be, and how does it become a catalyst for redeveloping around that historic Grand Avenue Water Tower, which used to be this fantastic, you know, mixed-use commercial hub.
And so this was part of the Green City Coalition work that you were doing there at the St. Louis Development Corporation. Now it's being handed over to the St. Louis Community Land Trust, along with these other parcels that it's taking over. What is the timeline of everything sort of making the big switch, getting this new organization up mm-hmm. and ready to go?
So the Post was reporting on a resolution that was passed that said St. Louis Development Corporation was ready to sign on to the agreement and kind of unlock this funding. So as soon as people actually sign that, which is happening this week, we'll be posting and looking for the executive director for the CLT. So we'll be looking for a new full-time leader, and then we'll start recruiting for the board, and we'll spend the rest of this year really building up that board's capacity, deciding what our bylaws and guiding principles are going to be and how we're going to maintain resident membership and leadership throughout. And by this time next year, we should start transferring properties from the land bank to the land trust and staffing up the side that's land management and programming and all that comes with it.
So this is all happening right now, and it sounds like there's going to be a real flurry of activity in the next year. You're going to be busy.
Yes. Well, hopefully the new staff will be busy. New people, new blood, fresh blood. Yes.
There you go. You're getting ready to hand this off. Well, I think this is so exciting, and I have the distinct feeling as we're talking to you today, this is not going to be the last time we talk about this here on the air. There's going to be just a lot of movement here, and it's going to be exciting to watch. So, Laura, again, thank you so much for joining us today and previewing where this could all go.
Thank you so much for having me.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.